Guess we might as well get started. There's going to be room for questions at the end, so as people are strolling in, I'm sure there's opportunity for that. This is the third State of Thunder, and wanted to thank you all for coming. And yeah, in this round, we're going to speak a little bit about mobile. It's more casual. This is not a presentation of me telling you all the things to do, but really an opportunity for us to chat a little bit about how things are going and where we're heading. So let's get started on that. I do have a little bit of something prepared just to kind of give you an idea where we are, but it's very makeshift. So let's see how that works out. I wanted to walk you a little bit through the mobile roadmap just to kind of see where we are and where we're going on that. And what exactly our mission is and the mobile side of things. Thing we came up with there is fiddle less with your phone. We want to make you productive. You'll need however long you need between on writing and reading emails, but the time in between is really that interesting part. It's where email takes long to load. Where's that email that I saw a few days ago? Oh no, I need to kind of search for this thing or find the folder that it's supposed to go into. How quickly can I continue writing that email that after I realized I'm right in front of my computer and have been typing it on my phone? How do I get that to my desktop? So how do we actually get there? It's not a straightforward path. We don't have the luxury of saying, well, okay, let's just add those features and then it's done. There's a lot to keep up with. The Android ecosystem is evolving constantly, with or without us. There's a bunch of platform features that we need to work out. Desktop, as we know, sometimes can be very daunting to modernize with some of the legacy code we have there. And it's the same for mobile, right? K9 Mail is 10 years old, so obviously. There are times when there was more maintenance and times with less maintenance. So we'll definitely need to keep up there. And on the other hand, we have a greenfield on iOS. So we can't really release both apps, features for both apps at the same time. But it's also a really great opportunity because here we can kind of say, okay, let's take this opportunity and say, we're going to create Thunderbird for iOS in a very modern way, make it adhere to the standards that we have these days, and see what we can use for the Android side of things as well. How did we actually come up with that roadmap? We take a number of things into account. It's not just MZLA or the powers that be make up a thing, and this is most important for us. Ryan said very fittingly that this should be the year of quality. And making users happy is really at the core of what we do. Happy users means more users, means more people that are willing to support us, which in turn means that we can create more of those interesting features and fix more of those bugs that inevitably creep in. Therefore, the release feedback is a really important part of the roadmap. The two areas that we identified had the most complaints, you could say, were the counter, certainly a large UI change, and just the trust in email notifications sometimes wasn't there. Next up, we want to make sure that people enjoy using Thunderbird and are productive. That means there's a few features that they might expect from other email clients as a baseline. But there's also some opportunities to explore the niches and differentiate. We have many users, and the community is important to us. So we also use Mozilla Connect to gauge interest. And at the time of creating this roadmap, the top requested features were HTML signatures and undo send and send later. So obviously, those features had to make it in somehow. What's our destination? We need to kind of group all these things into a higher level. The 2025 destination is getting a testing version of Thunderbird for iOS out. It's going to be very bare bones. You can read and send email. Don't expect that you have the fully polished email client quite this year, but we want to have a more incremental approach where we make it available to the community. And the first step for that was actually just getting the repository out. So if you want to give it a try, you can find it on our GitHub account. Increasing the trust in emails being delivered. They are being delivered, but sometimes it's the, well, I guess I forgot that the refresh interval is once an hour. Or if I'm making all of my push email folders, all of my folders push folders, then obviously we're hitting some constraints on how many connections we can make to the server. So just being a little bit more deliberate on that will make it easier for people to understand how things are going. Being more productive, focusing on specific aspects of email. And then all of this really needs refactoring to support it. So completing and documenting a few key refactorings aimed at that. Concretely, our roadmap is very public. We use GitHub projects to show this in a nice timeline view. Here's where you see Thunderbird for Android. Here's Thunderbird for iOS. So let's take a quick look at some of those. The account drawer is this first one. There was a lot of release feedback. You can read up a summary of that in exactly this ticket. Because it's a big UI change of the account drawer in K9 Mail and Thunderbird for Android before was different, and we made some changes. Obviously, there's more changes we need to make to bring back some of those features that people have been looking for, but also, just add a few, undo a few paper cuts and rough edits there and make that a little bit more smooth. And then there's a bunch of different projects that help us around error states, make it more clear when there's an error. You don't have to go to system notifications when you find them. You didn't approve the alarms permission because you didn't think it was necessary, but it does happen that we need that to be able to do a push email. When was the last time you synchronized? There's a lot of like small things like that that kind of add up. And when you know why it's not working, then it's a lot easier to understand and take action on it. There's a bunch of refactoring projects in here. Those are necessary just to provide us a good basis on that we can work on. The message database that we have there, it works, but if you see in Thunderbird for Android, for example, there's a few rough edges on loading email, and really you don't want to see the technical details of why it's working the way it's working in the UI. You just want it to be smooth. So there's a few projects like that that we need to work out. The list windowing is another one on that set right over here. There's some better defaults that we want to set to work out the startup process there. HTML signatures is on there. And the major UI project around the end of the year is the quick filters and email actions, which gives us a little bit of an opportunity to refresh and bring things closer to the thumb that you really need a little bit more often. And so I'm really excited to get working on some of that as well. On the iOS side, very simple. There's some architecture work. There's email core handling, email display, sending the email, and encryption is on here as well. That's likely going to head into next year, just because it takes a while to get things set up. But it is important to us because encryption is part of Thunderbird's mission, so we need to make sure that's in there as well. Okay. I'll leave it at that for now and open up the floor to any initial questions you all might have. Okay. So first of all, there was a question on S/MIME. Let me get that one back from moderator. The exact wording of the question was just, can we get an update on S/MIME digital signatures? It's the only feature that's keeping me from using Thunderbird on mobile devices. Forced to use fair email, I'd be willing to pay for this feature. Yes, I would love to see that as well. We kind of have to balance things a little bit. For Android, we do have PGP support through OpenKeyChain right now. So at least we have an encryption solution. On the IO side of things, we do aim to do encryption. Apple Mail already supports S/MIME, so PGP would kind of be the natural extension to support those people that would like to have a different or need PGP and would like to use that path. But in each of these projects, we need to think about the process of, you know, how do we post-process an email that comes in? And there's many ways to do that. That could be S/MIME, that could be PGP, that could be, I don't know, maybe extensions sometime down the line. So we have to build in some way to do this more generally. But we don't have any medium plans for S/MIME this year. And I think we can revisit that when we get to iOS encryption, because really the goal of building iOS is that we have a basis that's on modern standards, and maybe there's some components in there that we can kind of transplant into Thunderbird for Android using some of the multi-platform frameworks we're evaluating.
Curious if there's if we've talked to the OpenKeyChain folks, and if S/MIME support is of any interest to them?
I have not. I know they're pretty much in maintenance mode. They're not adding any new features to OpenKeyChain. If there's a security issue, they're going to take care of it. But it doesn't seem like they're planning to add any support to that right now. If that ever changes, that they say, well, okay, we're not going to support this anymore, then obviously we need to integrate that into Thunderbird a little bit more. But you know, it's worth considering if maybe the solution is to open this up to third-party apps like OpenKeyChain and add it in this way. The other path, of course, is to say, okay, you know, we could have our own implementation of both S/MIME and OpenPGP within Thunderbird for mobile, and you know, build this as part of the iOS plans for encryption that will come end of the year or maybe early next. Similar, I would like to have this is Exchange. We get this question very often. It came in through moderator. We got it very much at conferences. And it's, you know, it's that hard question. Well, in theory, we want to support open standards, and that isn't really an open standard, but we do want to enable a lot of users to experience open source and get into the ecosystem, because sometimes they're forced to use it. They have a university that uses Microsoft's products, or they are through their workplace, and we want to enable those people to use Exchange as well. I'd love to say this year, but not completely sure. We need to strike that balance between quality and features, and especially on Android, we want to improve our quality before we use something as Exchange, which will get in many new users. And you know, if they all come in and say, well, but this other feature that I'm expecting on the other clients that I'm using isn't here, then that's not really a great first time experience. So you know, my preference is that we focus a little bit more on the quality of things, but we are exploring to see if there's maybe an opportunity to add that on but we'd need some additional support to get that done.
You kind of mentioned it there, but if you want to talk a little bit about what the current decision point is as far as support goes, whether to use some of the Rust work or
anything else. Definitely. So, you know, this we'll need a little bit more exploring to figure out in the end what is the best path. But, you know, since we have the Rust work that's been done on desktop to kind of hide some of the quirks that might exist in Exchange, that's a really good basis to work on. It might be the first Rust feature. And Anytime you add a Rust feature to a mobile app, that's going to add, I don't know, 10, 20, 30 megabytes of just framework, and a little bit more complexity around debugging and all the things. But I could imagine that there's a few other projects in the future that might benefit from Rust support. I know that the Android components for Sync, for example, use Rust. So we need it at latest there anyway when we do that. So we can reuse that code, and then we need to add a bunch of glue code on top that handles networking stack and integration into the system as well. But I think another very interesting aspect of this is it opens us up to more protocols, and there's other protocols that people are really excited about, including JMAP. And I guess if we want to be neutral on the side of open versus closed, then that might be a nice addition to say, okay, if we're doing a bunch of the refactoring work anyway to support Exchange, and Kedi has already done some past work on JMAP as well, maybe this comes for a low cost of getting work done and being able to add JMAP support as we do that. But yeah, I think this needs a little bit more exploring. I don't really see a lot of things in the roadmap that scream, hey, let's drop this and add Exchange. So we're going to have to see if we can get some additional resources. Community help is always very welcome. There's somebody very dedicated and wants to help us build the thing, then happy to find ways to support that. But I think that's kind of the state of Exchange right now.
I have a question. So iOS, I know that we have like an engineer now, a couple of engineers more on your mobile team. Realistically, like what can we expect? Or I guess when can we expect an alpha, I guess there?
I think the when is kind of very roughly this year. On the high level, it would certainly be, the basics. You can send an email. You can read an email. Maybe not the most obscure HTML formatted email ever, but you can read an email that is in your inbox right now. Maybe some simple actions. Deleting an email seems fairly relevant, so let's see if we can get that done. But intentionally not as polished. What we want to avoid is the, oh, it looks done, why isn't this working? Type of feedback. But really, kind of pushing on the basics, getting that done. And then I think once you get to the 80%, the last 20% take a very long time to really complete.
I think if we had like an alpha, even a really rough one, to showcase and ask for testers at FOSDEM next year, that's like a good goal.
Yeah, I think that
That's cool.
seems pretty reasonable. Todd, is there anything you want to add on top of that?
I want to be really careful not to promise anything at all, but my personal hope is that, we have an alpha for Christmas. Can send and maybe even, or receive and maybe even send email.
Can you talk a little bit about what your theory is for K9 and for Thunderbird for Android? When we adopted K9, we said we really want this to be an Android client and to feel native and to respect kind of the material design guidelines and feel like it belongs on the platform. Do the two of you, Todd and Philip, have any concrete thoughts on how you feel about the look and feel and UX paradigms for the iOS client?
Yeah, okay. It's a great question. because yeah, I definitely, one of our design principles is to, respect the space that a user is coming from. So if you're used to Android, most of the apps do follow kind of a similar, similar style to the operating system. M3 that we're using definitely echoes that. iOS, same paradigm. Now, what I find really curious about this, well, we're starting off that way. Then we have our desktop client, which also has a different style. We definitely want to start tying these together, because as we move more into, I'm air quoting, a Thunderbird ecosystem, we want, you know, the experience to, you know, feel similar. It's your same home as you move across different applications, depending, you know, where you are. So if you're used to desktop client, when you jump into one of your mobile experiences, it shouldn't be a big shift. So the goal is really to bring those closer together. Where I find iOS playing really interesting in here, because I was deep in Apple's guidelines this weekend. And if I use the button as an example, the button is, it starts to look a little bit more like our buttons in client. They're a little bit more boxy, but maybe with a bit more rounded edges, as opposed to our M3 button, which is definitely very rounded on either side. So there's, it's iOS is starting to play as that little bit of an in-between naturally between client and what we currently have in Android. So I think in the future, we definitely always want to be, you know, pulling and respecting the operating system that we're in, but also having all of our UX, UI signals be more consistent across the board. So even when you're in web too.
Makes total sense. And I think that more and more, as we brought Android in kind of into the Thunderbird universe, one of the most common questions I get is, can you make this behave or act more like Thunderbird? And so I'm curious, outside of just the look, you know, what else is going to come in as far as the feel goes? And then this is just not a question, but just an observation. What are we going to take the other direction? Because Thunderbird is opinionated in some interesting areas, Thunderbird desktop. And we haven't carried those over to Android. And I'm curious how we're going to go ahead and reconcile that, or if we're not going to at all. I think about archive behavior. Thunderbird is very opinionated about its default archive behavior. I mean, at least last time I set up an account, it was still creating folders and putting them in there based on archive and then year. And I guess this is a good question for Philip. How do you think about those anachronisms between the clients?
Yeah, I think, you know, on the feature level, there's a few things that are good to bring over, right? You know, the quick filters from Thunderbird, just quickly see which ones are unread, which ones, you know, have certain properties. And, you know, first of all, you see that in a lot of other clients as well, but, you know, it's also something that's kind of missing. And this is where we have an opportunity to have a feature that's very often used to be similar, right? I think the other part of that, I mean, UI really drives a lot of it, because it's what it looks like, and there's, you know, certain aspects that make it similar. But I think there's an opportunity really to look at, okay, what is that expected behavior? You know, really start very deep and say, okay, what are actually all the features that we have in each of these clients, and what's the behavior of each of these features? And that really gives us that catalog to say, okay, for anyone coming in and wanting to develop for any of these platforms, what should they expect, and what's the direction that they should go into? So yeah, I totally think we should take a look at that and see what are the differences in behavior and get those aligned. On the other hand, and I see this a lot on the issue tracker, there's people saying, well, you know, now that Thunderbird for Android is part of Mozilla, and now that K9 Mail is part of Thunderbird, and it is Thunderbird now, everything should be as in Thunderbird desktop. Maybe not quite that much, but, you know, alluding to the fact that there's a difference in behavior or there's a missing feature. And I think we also have to acknowledge that, you know, they have a totally different history, and we can't just magically make it work. And, you know, even for Thunderbird for iOS, like, we can't just magically, you know, repeat 20 years of development on Thunderbird and, you know, get that same feature set and the same behavior running. So I think we have to be careful there on what we add. And I think the last point is kind of on form factor. There's a bunch of things that work really well on desktop because you have the space. You have the ability to see many things at once. But you know, you just don't have that luxury on mobile. You have very little space. You don't have a full keyboard usually. You have phones that are with very small displays, and then people set up their settings in a way that text is very large, and you basically have no screen space. So, and reacting to all of these things just is naturally different on a phone. So we need to take that into account as well. It's interesting. Actually, Todd and I were talking about this earlier today on like, okay, you know, what are actually the sizes that we're aiming for, and the dynamic text sizes. And one point that we've actually made was that, you know, we can focus on some of those core areas where it's important. When you read an email, it doesn't really matter what text size you've set. You need to be able to see who sent the email. You can't just say the first three letters and then dot, dot, dot. Whereas maybe there's other areas where it's okay if it's not perfect. People that set up their text size to the maximum, you know, they expect that some things will break or not look perfect, right? But, you know, there's some critical areas where we absolutely need to make sure that people are able to see the core features of the app.
I have lots of thoughts, but I want to hand it over to other folks if you have any. You don't have to, you know, say it out loud, but just very curious in the chat, like, who is using the Thunderbird Android client? Like I said, that's just for me, but maybe I'll call out here in a little bit for those listening or watching how many we've got just in the room. I'm an Android user, so I'm also probably one of the most annoying people constantly reporting things. And on that front, while those rules roll in, and anybody feel free to jump in and any of your questions, but I'll ask a couple. One specific feature question. Get this a lot. I'm coming from Gmail. I brought my Gmail account to Thunderbird for Android. That's not me. This is a question I get. I'm missing the different types of email, the classifications, the important, the which is like your main inbox, the social, the I don't remember what all the tags are, but you know, they have these different ways of tagging emails so that you can do the important first and then you can go over and look at social or forum, or I don't remember all of the ones. Any conversations that the team has had about supporting those in some fashion?
I think it has come up, but not in that level of detail, right? The crux here is that, you know, I believe there's no direct way to see that from IMAP. Like they could be using like actual IMAP labels, but they don't. I might be wrong on this, but I think the only way to get that is using their API to categorize those emails. So if that's the case,
that's correct. I'm pretty sure that we have to extend the IMAP to do Gmail specific stuff.
Right. So, you know, that's another, we're adding something very specific, some specific workarounds for one provider using an API that, you know, isn't as open as the standards that work there. So ideologically, we should be saying, well, of course, we're not doing that because, you know, as long as if they adhere to standards or willing to work with us on a standard that builds on top of it, then we can build it. But, you know, there's a lot of Gmail users and, you know, they might benefit from that. So I'm a little bit on the fence on that, but it's hard for me to say. I don't really use that feature a lot.
Go ahead, Heather.
Also, as a Gmail user, I do love Thunderbird for Android, but it drives me nuts that it goes subject and then who sent it. Whereas on Gmail or even on Thunderbird for desktop, it says who sent it first and then the subject.
Mm-hmm.
So my brain has to spend cycles to like, what am I looking at to readjust when I look at my phone? Is there any thought on making that consistent, at least like with the desktop client?
It's an interesting point. I think we could take a look at that. I vaguely remember an issue on this where there was an idea of, okay, can we customize this somehow that, you know, people see whatever they want to see first. Some people have a little bit more focus on the subject, others on the person that they're getting the email from. But yeah, like, you know, in turn, this is kind of leads into one of those consistency questions. Like, do we aim for consistency, but then everyone who's used to the current thing, we need to get them used to the new default? Do we add yet another option to make it customizable, but then end up with very, very many options at some point? And how do we kind of transition that? But I think, you know, if we might be answering some of these questions when we look at iOS on, you know, what is, how do we want to display that in iOS? And maybe we can take some of those changes over to Android as well.
Yeah, I get that we don't want to introduce like a million different customizable preferences. But, you know, I do see an argument for this specifically because it's such a core thing to reading emails.
Okay, so this, I think, kind of builds off of what Heather was saying. And I also was thinking about the recent Community Office Hours we did about the Account Hub that kind of walks, you know, has like a that wizard type thing that more people are used to set up their email accounts, which will be coming to Calendar and then to Addressbook. And one of the things I've seen, you know, in answering reviews from people is people kind of being frustrated with like, oh, I didn't know that this is where I had to set this, or this is where I had to set this. And have we thought of maybe some kind of setup wizard that could kind of, I know we have setting improvements coming this year. And this seems, Philip, really to go with your kind of overarching goal of fiddle less with your phone. So like to fiddle less with the setting. So I'm kind of curious to see kind of what your thoughts are and then how, and then just kind of what might be coming down the road for that.
Right. I think like that first time experience is certainly very interesting. We don't want to add too many things to that because someone who's just getting started the very first time, you know, they just want to get their email. They don't care about all these settings. So like giving them that choice right there at the beginning might be a little bit too early. I feel there's always kind of, to make a video game analogy, two types of people when it comes to options. There's the people that just go in the game and get going. There's the others that just, you know, look at the options and configure everything before they get started. So it's exactly the right way they want it to be. And I think, you know, this works in the same way with account setup, right? You know, there's people that they want to configure everything, but since they want to configure everything, they're going to go that extra length and go to the options and start looking through all the menus. And there's other people that just want sensible defaults and get started with those. So I think we have to make some effort to think about sensible defaults. And that's easy to say, but hard to do because, you know, what is sensible? What I find is sensible might not necessarily be what others find is sensible. So being able to have some information on, you know, what are people actually using in those settings does help us optimize that first account setup. If we are able to see, okay, there's the population is very split on this. It's basically 50-50. Maybe that is actually a good candidate to add to the first time setup. If, you know, a lot of people just don't touch it at all, then either we remove it or we just leave it in the settings for people to make that switch.
That's a really good point on like the 50-51. So yeah. All right. Well, thank you.
Sure thing.
Yeah, I thought on that, the last item that Monica brought up as far as a tour. You know, maybe one way to address it in part is not to necessarily give people an introduction or a tour on specific settings, but just give them a general tour of the UI and indicate, you know, okay, where the three dots are, this is where you look for certain things. People particularly might be helpful for people that are not very inquisitive or are new to Android. Just a thought there.
Yeah, definitely. That's an interesting point on getting users set up. I know that we had like a documentation page for K9 Mail a while back, where it was basically like a user manual. But unfortunately, it was hard to kind of keep maintained. And I'm hoping we can make good on that by having maintained sumo pages that really explain how things are working for, you know, some of the very common questions we get. But yeah, you know, I think as we progress, it might be interesting to see if there's maybe like a UI tour type thing that we can do.
Great. And I have two additional items, both of which have come up on Connect and support and Reddit. Not ranking necessarily as high as S-Mime, but nevertheless up there. Whether we would add calendar, which, you know, we have discussed before.
Mm-hmm.
And a second item, creating IMAP folders in Android, such as you can do on desktop.
Yes. So if I stay by what we said on, we're looking at some of those top questions. The calendar question on Connect has 137 thumbs up. So we're definitely entering the territory where it's useful. I think in terms of calendar, we kind of have to find that balance. You know, it's a really new application or a new feature that's not just, you know, we add a small thing to the existing, but it is essentially a new product. And, you know, a conversation we had recently was, does it actually have to be part of Thunderbird for Android, or should we maybe have a separate Thunderbird calendar application that just works really well with Thunderbird for Android or Thunderbird for iOS, so that people can kind of make that switch. It gives us the opportunity to maybe even reuse a few things. I know that desktop is doing a bunch of work on the UX front for calendar, and maybe there's an opportunity for us to, you know, kind of just take some of that work as a web component and then use a more web-based framework to get that into a calendar application. It allows us some opportunities to integrate with some of the services that Thunderbird has been working on for calendar. But, you know, I think given the size of the effort, it's hard to kind of fit into an existing roadmap when there's quality issues that I really want to get done and focus on before we start something completely new.
Right. Yes, that does match what we had discussed before and what we've been telling users.
Let me ask a question, Philip. This is kind of a fun extra credit question. As someone very, very familiar with calendar,
mm-hmm.
What are some opportunities that you see, you know, not even thinking about doing something in the near future, but if we did do an Android calendar app, what are some opportunities that you see, and what are some things you might do differently than we did with Thunderbird desktop calendar that might help folks?
That's a good question. Better invitation handling, I guess. You know, I think when these apps play together, it's really about, okay, how do we make things fast? And, you know, kind of alluding again to the productivity and fiddling less with your phone, how can we make that information that you have in your calendar available to email in a way that gets you the information you need? If you're, well, you know, Gmail is doing some of this with, you get an email about a reservation and then you get some info on, you know, how does that fit into your calendar? There's some nice open source micro formats or structured email formats that give extra information, allow the sender to kind of embed events or other pieces of information into an email. And I think there's a few opportunities there to connect that to the calendar. But yeah, I think it's an interesting space to explore that I'd love to hear some other opinions on as well. Yes, the next question that will come is, when do we get Exchange Calendar support?
Ah, yes, you're used to our users now.
All right. I have another question that came up on Weblate, the translation platform that we use. So the question is roughly, you know, we've been using Weblate for Thunderbird for Android desktop, and the rest of Mozilla uses Pontoon, the other platform that Mozilla has created. And the answer back in 2023 was, well, you know, this is what we're using. There's a community behind it already, and there were some questions that the community at the time had gone through, and they landed on Weblate as the best approach there. Before, we had been using TransFX, but it wasn't very well supported for the use cases we had, and it seemed that Weblate was the right path at the time. Obviously, you know, this question came up for me as well, like, okay, you know, now that we're more part of Mozilla, do we head over to Pontoon and make use of the many very dedicated translators that we have on that platform? Or do we stick with Weblate, which has served us very well? It seems to me that we're getting a bunch of the benefits from Weblate in that random people are coming in through the platform, through Weblate itself, and exploring Thunderbird for Android. So we're able to grow our community in, you know, quite the same way that Mozilla does on getting people excited about localization. And it supports a bunch of formats that work really well for us. So I don't really see an immediate need to pack our bags and say, okay, let's head over to Pontoon just for the sake of it. I think, you know, there'd have to be something that works substantially better in Pontoon for us to make that switch right now. For Thunderbird for iOS, we definitely need to stay wherever Android is, and we need to stay with a platform that allows us to share strings. And it seems to me that Weblate can do exactly this. So, you know, we have a glossary, and the glossary has some of the strings that are shared across both platforms. And then we have components or projects for each of these, for each of the apps. And then translators really only need to translate once, and it's immediately available to both products. And especially since there is going to be a lot of overlap, since they're kind of both mobile platforms, it makes sense to have a platform that supports that. But I think, you know, in the end, this is really not a question of what do we think is best, but, you know, where is the majority of the community? So I think the localizer community is the right group to have these discussions with, which includes everyone who's currently localizing on Weblate. It includes the many dedicated volunteers on Pontoon and in the Mozilla community to see, okay, you know, what's the best path forward? And then we really just need to look at the pros and cons and make a decision at that point. Who here has localized Thunderbird into their language, no matter if desktop or mobile? Not even one string? Well, then you have something to do for tomorrow. Pick Thunderbird, take your language, and translate at least one string. It's really easy to get started. And I think if you do one string, it'll be like, oh, come on, that was it. Can do a few more here.
My localization is really easy. And it, I wanted to ask a question that is related to the volunteers. Mm-hmm. I've seen some great contributions to the Android repo recently, and I wanted to ask, what are some great callouts of recent contributions that have come from the community, and give you kind of the space to acknowledge mm-hmm. folks, because I've seen quite a few in there that have surprised me.
Definitely. This is the very off the top of my head list, so I might forget a few folks. I mentioned a few last week, or not last week, but the last State of Thunder that I was here as well. But Shamim has been very dedicated in helping us with all the small things on refactoring thing from here to there, to building a small feature, to, you know, really getting involved. And, you know, it goes above the oh, I have a patch for this, but really trying to figure out, okay, how can I tackle the next big thing? And what I'm very excited about, Shamin would love to tackle Thunderbird Sync, actually, which is certainly a big project, so we're going to need a few more volunteers to help out with that. But I think this is a great project to kind of try one of the big things, and so we're happy to support him to get there. Really excited about that. Clément, I think we mentioned last time as well, sent us a pull request with exactly the thing that the design team had been working on. We had the folder hierarchy, had a few changes planned there to make it a little bit easier to deal with folders, and you know, I'd gone back and forth with design a little bit, and it seemed like, okay, this is the thing, we're going to put this on a bug, and hope we can get to it soon. And then Clément came and just did a pull request that looked exactly like the thing we've been planning, and that is so amazing. That's like my dream come true, so I'm really happy about that as well. Yeah, I think those are kind of the top two. There's a few more highlights that I recently made in the blog. Sergio has improved the back button navigation when editing graphs. Selkinoma has made our workflow runs a little bit more efficient and helped us fix an issue in the find folders view. Smartech improved our edge-to-edge support, which is great. This is another one of the projects that we'd like to or have to focus on this year, getting support for Android 15 edge-to-edge support, where you can kind of expand the UI into all the nooks and crannies of your phone. There was one view where they had taken care of that. So definitely interested in getting a few more folks to support that. Hussein fixed some inconsistencies with the show unified inbox. Ayun had begun some work to update the some of the widgets that we have in Thunderbird for Android that you can put in your start screen. They were using a lot of legacy code, and Ayun had then taken that step forward to say, okay, let's see if we can re-implement this using Jetpack Compose. And that's currently behind a feature flag, but we hope to work that out. And that also gives you dark theme support for the widgets, which is pretty cool. And SDT Apollo has made the logo size more dynamic in the onboarding screen. There was another issue that she was working on. It was also something that is design related. Laurel, maybe you know. But overall, you know, these were some great contributions. I'm really happy that we have so many people coming and saying, hey, this is something cool I want to work on, because I think it's pretty cool. I like to work on this, and love to share that with as many people as possible.
I noticed you get more, I think you get more flyby contributions than desktop does. You have theory on why that is, or I have theories, but I want to hear your theory.
I think
on that one.
Yeah, go ahead.
So one of the call outs that I was going to make, something that I noticed immediately is that like the organization and the simplicity of contributing to Android. You don't have to have a complicated deployment workflow. There's not 70 things to install. You just clone the repo, build it in Android Studio. You can run tests. I think there's like a low barrier to entry because of how clean I know we're refactoring and there's a lot of work to do, but the architecture of the app is simple. It hasn't been engineered in circles, and the cleanliness of the uncluttered-ness of being able to like sit down and do a patch, you know, is like, in my opinion, the thing that like we fully intend to copy that on iOS, where it's just clone and run. And I think that's a great way to get people who might be intimidated otherwise to just submit a patch, you know. That's my guess. It is just a guess.
Do you think that it's maybe a bit of a leading question, but do you think that the accessibility of GitHub also contributes to that? I think it's, for me personally, it's easier to find good first issues and kind of understand them. But I'm curious if you think that that's a boon or not.
No question from my standpoint. GitHub is just more accessible. Everybody's there and familiar with it. It is like, I'm sure it decreases the friction to contributing.
Yeah,
I agree. Like, you know, just in terms of tooling, GitHub's issue tracker is meant to be very simple. It's not. Bugzilla can do basically everything, which is great because you can do basically everything. It's great for development because you can have very complicated hierarchies of I want to fix this and then that. Whereas GitHub has a very simple focus, and that simple focus just allows people to, you know, really find the things in the same way across many projects. And you know, we put effort into good first bugs. Every time I see something that's maybe a good first bug, I tag it that way, add a little bit of context on it could be this, so that, you know, even if it's not, then we have some initial pointers for someone to investigate and see if that's something that they want to fix. So definitely, if you haven't taken a look at that, then here's the opportunity.
And then I'll be done with my questions. Where do people go? What do they do if they want to get involved right now? They're listening to City of the Thunder and they're like, yeah, it's time. What do they do?
Definitely. So I guess start the way you'd start when you see the project. Go to github.com/Thunderbird/Thunderbird-Android. The README has a section on contributing that will point you exactly to the places to get started. If you want to start with a good first bug, there's labels on the issues that you can filter by and take a look at that. If you want to take a look at something that's a little bit more complicated, there's a help wanted tag. There's many other ways to do it. Localization. Do you speak some other language? Okay, perfect. You're a good contributor. Head over to Weblate, which is also linked on the main README. And then you can just translate a string. It's fairly easy. It just takes a few minutes. Triaging. If you look at our recent blog post on the Thunderbird blog, there's a small section on how to get started on that. But really, you know, there's a bunch of unconfirmed issues where, yes, it's maybe an issue, but we haven't really had the time to try to reproduce it or, you know, ask some of the questions on how does the, you know, what device do you have? What version are you on is in the list? But, you know, asking some of those initial questions on getting some logs for the issues that are relevant. So really, there's a lot of ways to contribute, no matter if you can develop or not. And if there's something that you're doing that you're really excited about that you'd like to apply for to Thunderbird for Android or Thunderbird for iOS and it's not listed, get in touch with us. I think we'll find a way. And that was the perfect question towards the end of the hour, I think, to bring this to an end. Really enjoyed having a short conversation with you. I hope we can continue this. Head over to the Matrix channel. If you're not already there and come in with a question. And I'm really excited about what we can build together on this.
Thank you, Philip. You've been an excellent host. Thank you for hosting this today.
Thank you.